ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For more than 20 years, Australians have turned to Botox when unwanted wrinkles begin to emerge. It's widely seen as a harmless way to look younger without surgery. But until recently, Botox and other cosmetic fillers have gone largely unchecked. So why have regulators decided to crack down now? Today we speak to a long-time Botox user and a health law expert about why we need to rethink what we're injecting. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
I'm Alison Rice, and I'm a conscious career and business mentor.
Alison, I want to unpack with you your journey with Botox, you know, just to understand a little bit about why it's so popular, what's good about it, what's not so good about it. Just tell me, when did you first decide you wanted to try Botox?
Well, it's interesting because I'm not sure I can say that I decided to try Botox. It actually came about in a pretty unique way. I was working as a beauty editor for a website about a decade ago, and one of the biggest trends at the time was preventative aging and anti-aging. And I had been propositioned by an injector, by a doctor, to try Botox as a preventative anti-aging method. But yeah, it was kind of part of the job, and I went and did it, and I was very naive. And I ended up continuing to do it actually for 10 years.
Wow. Okay. So how old were you when you first started doing it then?
So I was 28 when I started, which now when I reflect back, you know, I'm 38 now, I'm about to turn 39. Mm. And it's interesting, at that time I thought I was old.
Yes.
You know, we do that when we're younger. We always think we're the oldest in the room.
You barely had a wrinkle back then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why do you think you kept doing it?
I think I got very used to feeling what I would call done.
Mm-hmm.
So this ability to kind of wake up in the morning and your face just was kind of ready to go because you felt fresh no matter how much sleep that you'd had. You know, obviously nothing was really moving. The skin was tight. That became kind of addictive.
Okay, well, let's come to when you stopped using it in a moment. You actually used it in the lead up to your wedding. Just tell me about that and how you felt on the day because of it.
Yeah, so this is where I go back to wanting to be with that younger version of me and sit her down and say, is this the right decision for us, especially at this time? Because I actually got Botox for the first time a few months before I got married.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into my wedding day. Of course, I felt good. I felt fresh. I felt rested and beautiful and all of these things, but what I recognized on the day is that I wasn't able to express any emotion. And, you know, for many people, our wedding is one of the biggest, most emotional days of our lives. And I didn't feel like I was able to be my true self on my wedding day because my face was, for the most part, frozen. And I now have a kind of tricky relationship with the photos because I look back and I can see that lack of emotion. I can see that statuesque type look. It was almost like I was a wax figure at my own wedding. I was crying as I was walking down the aisle, but you can't actually tell because my face wasn't moving. So there's tears, but my, you know, my eyes weren't changed. My, you know, there was no kind of expression. There was nothing to show that I was actually feeling anything, and I won't get that back.
All right. And then you went on, of course, as you mentioned, after the wedding, you know, you used Botox for a decade. So what was it that switched in you and you said, no more, I don't want to do this anymore?
There was a few things. I think the primary thing is I'd had an experience of not having Botox when I was pregnant and when I was breastfeeding my little girl. Mm-hmm. But I also felt, like many new mothers do, that sense of wanting to feel or look rested even when we're not, and feel fresh and feel youthful. So at around 18 months old, when she was 18 months old, I started doing it again. Mm-hmm. What I quickly realized is how much I needed to ensure that she could read me. And I started to really think about what she was experiencing and how she was viewing me. And even when my voice was heightened or I was excited, my face wasn't moving. Mm. And so I could also look at her and identify that she couldn't quite understand how I was feeling at any given time. And then there's a kind of bigger overarching piece for me around my own evolution as a woman and what it means to be in womanhood and move into elderhood. And this is a good thing. This is a positive thing. And I wanted my life experience and my wisdom to show on my face. It just didn't feel authentic for me to look 28, you know, anymore in my life. So they were kind of the bigger themes that were coming up for me.
Mm. So Alison, tell me, when you look in the mirror now, you're Botox free, what do you see?
I see my true self. I see Alison in all of her glory and life experience. And that actually has been the most empowering thing for me. I had a lot of fear that I wouldn't like the woman who was staring back at me, or I'd feel old or ugly or look tired. And the opposite has been true. I look in the mirror and I feel so authentic. I feel so comfortable. I feel and look relaxed in a way that I didn't before and I couldn't before, because my face wasn't relaxed.
My name's Dr. Christopher Rudge. I'm a law academic and lecturer at the University of Sydney Law School, and my specialisation is in health and medical law.
Chris, we've been speaking to a woman who used Botox for about 10 years. Is it fair enough to say that Botox is safe for us to use? It's been around for a long time, right?
Yes, the actual substance, Botox, is a Schedule 4 drug that requires approval and regulation, needs to be checked for quality and so forth, but you need a prescription technically to have it administered to you. So it is a controlled drug. It's not something harmless. Although it does have toxic potential in very, very large quantities, it's observed to be very safe at the level it's used at for cosmetic procedures.
And is it safe just to sort of walk into a clinic off the street and just trust the person that's there to administer the Botox?
This is where the important work of the regulators and some other government agencies has been directed recently, because while it's safe as a substance, theoretically, the way that it is administered is very important. And so it's very, very much possible for infections to arise. Abscesses can form in sensitive parts of your face, etc. If the injections are not done in a way that's consistent with best training and practice.
The Therapeutic Goods Administration told 730 it's received 12 reports of blindness related to dermal filler over more than a decade. Only 3 of those patients fully recovered their vision. In the same time frame, there's been 25 reports of necrosis, the death of skin tissue.
We've seen poor infection control, we've seen adverse reactions to products, we've seen people clearly with significant mental health issues and vulnerabilities around body dysmorphia being offered treatments.
So let's have a look then at the regulations around this, because I guess up until now it seems like it hasn't been an industry that has been regulated very much.
That's right. So these cosmetic procedures, which use things like injections for Botox, as well as dermal fillers, fat-dissolving acids, which are also injected, threaded facelifts and the like, they have kind of not been as scrutinised by regulators and have been effectively uncontrolled so long as the practitioners administering them have their medical or nursing or dental qualifications. In recent times, when there's been a crackdown on cosmetic surgeries, as the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency did that work, it was discovered that many complaints were coming from the cosmetic procedures as well.
Right, yeah, because last year regulation of the cosmetic surgery industry was really tightened. That was sort of seen as a Wild West area where surgeons could sort of get away with whatever they wanted, and it was really concerning. But you're saying now also that shone a spotlight on things like Botox. So tell me what has changed when it comes to the regulation of non-surgical procedures.
Yes, so ARPRA, the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency, has created three new guidelines which stipulate the expected standards for nurses, health practitioners, including medical and dental practitioners, and also anyone, any practitioner who advertises these services. There's a few others as well. There's a new qualification available that has been designed by the Australian Medical Council, and they have listed criteria for universities and other educational institutions to develop courses around to train people in cosmetic surgery now. And so we will have visibility as potential patients and consumers to see who has that specialist cosmetic surgery training and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean cosmetics, all people who perform cosmetic procedures will require that training, but the idea is that patients will be able to determine who is in possession of that training and who is not, and make a better informed decision about who they select as their practitioner.
Mm. I noticed they're also looking at advertising, because there's a concern, I guess, that they're sort of called anti-wrinkle procedures or filler procedures, and maybe that's a bit deceiving, is it?
Yes. The Therapeutic Goods Administration has created an advertising code, which means certain terms won't be able to be used, because sometimes those procedures don't create fewer wrinkles and patients don't have the full information they need to consent to the treatment.
All right. Well, cosmetic procedures are, we understand, getting more and more popular. So do you think these new regulations on non-surgical procedures, will that see a reduction in people actually using things like Botox, do you think?
That's a difficult question. It's said to be a $1 billion industry a year in Australia and, as you say, increasing in popularity. I just don't think this will deter practitioners from entering this field. It may require them to skill up, but I personally think that's a good thing. And I think if there is a large consumer demand, and that is clear, then I don't think it will deter practitioners from offering the services just because the requirements to deliver them are stricter.
Dr. Christopher Rudge is a law lecturer at the University of Sydney. Alison Rice is a former Botox user and a beauty writer and editor. This episode was produced by Bridget Fitzgerald and Nell Whitehead. Audio production by Anna John and Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coey. I'm Sam Morley. Thanks for listening.